Your weekend is not complete without the First Lady of New York Radio. It's the Joan Hamburg Show, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Joan Hamburg Show. And who would believe, right? All of us, Passover, Wednesday night, Easter Sunday, a whole different time. Everything is virtual. And at least the holidays signify new beginnings and hopeful and future and happy. So we've got to just grab it and think like that. Chris, what do? We think about food. And I actually had someone say to me, how could you think about food at times like this? Well, why not, right? The alternative is so unpleasant. So we spend a lot of time thinking about breakfast, lunch, and dinner. In fact, I invited Melissa Clark to be our guest today. You know who she is. She's the wonderful New York Times columnist. She writes Good Appetite, does really terrific recipes that we can all use. And she's got a new book out. You know what? I love to hear about people's childhoods and growing up. And she was the child of two shrinks. And they took, in those days, shrinks would take off the month of August. And her parents would take their children and head off to France. So they would spend a month cooking, shopping, and eating. And the book is terrific. You're going to love it. Wonderful recipes and easy to make. And as she pointed out, she herself is having the hardest time getting deliveries. Now, Amazon is definitely upping the ante. So that's just something you know. Right now, it's still a window and very hard to get online to any of these services, but they're hiring, they say, thousands of people. And that should be able to make a very big difference. But I heard, you know, the doctor that we see on all the press conferences, Dr. Deborah Birx, very attractive woman with the scarves. Anyway, I caught her early one morning, and she was talking about her own circumstances. She very rarely gets personal, but she was saying her grandbaby had a high fever of around 103, and she, the big doctor, the guru, couldn't even get to that child. Hopefully the baby's better now. But she urged everyone to stay home. So here's what I thought I would do for you. Melissa's going to come on and give us her wonderful food advice. And I'm going to tell you some of the services that I've been hearing about, that I know about, that I have tried, and things that maybe will help you. And actually, Florence Fabricant, also from the New York Times, I just spoke to Florence the other day, and she was reminding me that she did a really good piece in the Times on these places like Chef's Warehouse, and that shop.chefswarehouse.com. It pays to go on and just look. And Baldor, a very good wholesale grocer, he does a lot of great stuff. Mercado.com, they have everything, and they've been very good. And those of you who came out to the Hamptons area, Hampton Bays, Quag, South, East, the whole deal. A friend, my friend Joni the archaeologist, who's very good at digging up things, found another wholesaler that was the fish wholesaler. And this family worked with local fisher people, providing fish for all the restaurants. It's called Haskell, H-A-S-K-E-L-L, Fish. And whatever the fleet is catching fluke, monkfish, piconoque, I think, or Chinook scallops, not the little ones, the big ones. And they were reasonable. They deliver right to your door. They don't charge you for it. And let me give you the number, because the product has been terrific. And when I called, they told me this is what they had. They had fluke, and they did have monkfish, and they did have the big scallops, and they had lobsters. Sometimes they have oysters. It's got to be fresh local fish from the east end of Long Island. 631-610-4081. And I'll give you a couple of places out there, and then we'll try to hit the other areas where people who have homes ran, if they live in the city area. Milk Pail, which is famous for its apples and its peaches, they have definitely expanded what they have. And they have a lot of produce, a lot of good stuff. And they're on Montauk Highway in Watermill. And here's another one, which is in Sag Harbor, but delivery. And this is Serene Green at 631-808-3203. A fabulous list of things. And they deliver in this area, but all over the place. You know, Dan Barber, the incredible chef and owner of Blue Hill, Stone Barn in Westchester, and Blue Hill on Washington Street, Washington Place in Greenwich Village. Dan has developed meal kits, and people love, you know, everyone's so down. They love getting these kits. They're Dan's beautiful. You know, you have to find out what kind he has. But we got one, and we were so excited. It was just the way, in gorgeous taste. We unfolded and unwrapped all this stuff. So it was really good. And speaking of good, another friend who's very involved with Irish Rep, Kathleen Bagala, told me about an organic delivery all over Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and it's called Rustic Roots Organic Home Delivery. I didn't know about that one at all, and she said she's been using them for ages and that it's really terrific. So those are just a couple of things that might get you going and keep you in the loop until we're back. And we're doing, Lizzie, my daughter, the other night, made polenta. She found that she had a box of polenta, and she had some mushrooms, and she made polenta mushrooms with Parmesan cheese. It was really delicious. And then making soups. They had a lot of poached chicken left, and it's making a lot of meals. It's making salad, teriyaki, stir fry, fried rice. I've been making a really good fried rice, and it's easy. In a frying pan, I just saute whatever, onions, peppers, carrots, celery, saute that. And then if you have any leftover meat or sausage or a little bacon, you don't have to have any of that. It could be chicken. It could be fish if you have it, or you don't have to do any of that stuff. But once it's all sauteed, I add leftover rice. It should be cold from the refrigerator to make good fried rice. And I stir in, I happen to have tamari sauce or soy sauce or teriyaki sauce. Just stir that in, telling you. And you can beat an egg in too. You've got a really good, and that's kept us going for a while, a really good dinner. All right, everyone, I think of all of you all the time. Happy, happy Easter Sunday. I hope Passover has been really wonderful for all of you celebrating. And know whatever it is, we're going to come through it. And you and I are going to talk again. But let's make room for Melissa Clark the New York Times food columnist who's going to take us by the hand and give us a lot of great food ideas and celebrate her new book. I'm Joan Hamburg. Straight ahead.
The First Lady of New York Radio, Joan Hamburg, entertaining and informative. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome, everyone, to the Joan Hamburg Show. As you know, extraordinary times. We're broadcasting from home, and I'm telling you that I do probably what a lot of you do. We think mostly of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The news is so bad that it's just better to think about, what am I going to make today, or what's in the cupboard that I can make? Melissa Clark keeps us company. One of the great food columnists for the New York Times. We love reading her column, Good Appetite, all the time, and cook from it. But Melissa, in spite of the world going crazy, has a brand new book called Dinner in French, My Recipes, and They're in the Way of France. So Melissa, a very unusual time to have an exciting new book out.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely, it's been disconcerting. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing. We do, like you just said, we do all need to eat. In a way, cooking has become more important in our lives because we have to cook maybe for the first time ever three meals a day, 7 days a week, for a long time. So, you know, we're in this together. You know, maybe it's not a night. It's definitely not a good time to go on a book tour, so that's been canceled. But I've been hearing from people all over the country who have been cooking from the book, and, you know, they're cooking more than ever. And what they have been saying, which is really nice for me to hear, is when they open this book, they are transported away from their homes into another world and, you know, into maybe a French vacation that, you know, no one is going to go on right now. So that makes me happy. And, you know, the recipes are, there, a lot of them are very doable, even if you are cooking out of your pantry. Because, you know, the thing about French food, you know, Joan, I designed this book. When I was thinking French food, you know, most of us think of like, oh, fancy, fancy, chef-driven,
exactly,
recipe. And what I was thinking is, you know what? French people make dinner every single night just like Americans, and they have some great tips and techniques and ingredient combinations, and that's what I wanted to highlight. French home cooking, rustic cooking, and a lot of those things can be made with things from the pantry.
Well, which is really good for all of us to know. Now, Melissa, part of the joy of reading the book is finding out more about you, because you had an unusual childhood and that your parents really had a thing for the French way of life and spent so much time with your family, finding out who does the best of what all over France.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, I had a very unusual childhood. My parents were psychiatrists. And, you know, when I was growing up, in the 70s and 80s, psychiatrists traditionally took the whole month of August off, which, you know,
right,
if you think about it now, it's crazy. But that's what they did. If you had a mental breakdown in August, you just had to wait, you know.
That's right.
So it was crazy. And they took us, so every month in August, they would take us, my sister and myself, and we'd go to France. And we went to France by way of house exchanging. So this was before Airbnb. This was before the internet. We would write letters to French people. We'd get a book of people who'd list their names, and they'd say, okay, yes, we want to do a house exchange, and they'd write a sentence about their house, and we would just exchange letters, airmail letters, and we'd send out, you know, the book would come in January, and we would send out a bunch of letters, and it would take weeks to get a response, and then people would respond to us, and we'd make an exchange, and so we would travel. It was a great way for us to travel all over the country. Every year we'd go somewhere different and learn about different regions of France and French culture. But it was also the only time I ever cooked with my family. France was where I learned how to cook, because, you know, my parents were working all the time when I was a kid. They were seeing patients well into the evening until like 9 o'clock at night. And so we never cook together as a family, except in France. So to me, France is, that is so much of a part of how I learned to become a cook, how I learned to shop in markets, you know, learning about seasonal food, learning about farm-to-table food. This was all from a very early age for me. And, you know, I've incorporated this into everything I make these days. So it's a very personal book in a way that a lot of my other books aren't.
I'm talking to Melissa Clark, one of the great food columnists from the New York Times. And Melissa, at this time, has a brand new book out called Dinner in French. And it's all about how she grew up as a child, spending her parents, psychiatrists, their month off in the summer, eating their way through France. So when you were a kid, it wasn't like, let's sit at the dinner table and mom would not bring out, or your father, something spectacular they had made.
I mean, in the summers, yes. In the summers, we would all do that. We would sit at the table together. We would cook together. We would shop together for food. It was, you know, the family obsession. Like, oh, you know, like what you were just saying, how we're all right now thinking about what are we going to eat next. That's how we thought all the time. But during, you know, during the regular rest of the year, when it was in August, then, you know, my sister and I were eating. We ate separately from my parents. We ate early because, you know, they wouldn't have dinner till 9:30. On weekends, it was different. And, but yeah, it was almost like these two different lives. You know what I mean? There was like my normal Brooklyn life. And we ate out a lot in Brooklyn too. You know, we went to DeFara's and had pizza. We had dim sum, you know, in Brooklyn Chinatown. We would go to Lundy's, you know, back when I was really little and have
great,
you know,
great restaurants and Sunset Park.
Yeah, exactly. So we, you know, Brooklyn, and we ate bagels and lox every Sunday. So Brooklyn to me was, it was more about the food of going out, and then France was more about cooking.
So when you came of age and went to finished high school and went on, did cooking was like you knew that's what you were going to do? Food, cooking, arts?
You know, I didn't actually. I originally thought I was going to, I went to grad school to do an MFA, and I thought I was going to be a novelist. I knew I wanted to write. And I had loved studying early modern history in college. And so when I went to grad school, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to write historical novels. I'm going to be like Antonia Fraser and write these amazing historical novels. But I realized pretty quickly that everything I wanted to write about was food. I mean, it was just my obsession. And it was my metaphor. It was the way I told my story. It was the way I saw the world. And I found MFK Fisher, thank God, and she, you know, she's a famous food writer back in the 50s, 40s and 50s, and 30s even. And I read her books, and I thought, okay, well, I want to do that. So I switched gears sort of in the middle of my graduate program and started writing about food, and it just clicked, and it clicked. And then I decided, okay, I need to really learn how to cook. So I took it a lot more seriously, and I combined the two.
Which is to all of our benefit. Now, is your family really into it, like you were as a child?
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay, not like I was. I mean, you know, that's extreme. But my husband and my daughter are, you know, we love to cook together. My husband is a sourdough bread baker, which is coming in very handy right now, I have to tell you. Everybody's
right,
making sourdough.
You can smell it all over. It's like the biggest thing. We went through, when I was in my early 20s, baking bread. It was a big deal. All of a sudden, it's back again.
Yeah.
I literally took out the old pans I used to bake them in, which are sort of rusty, and put them on the counter to remind me that may be the next step. But let's take a look. We just heard recent warnings. I mean, it's been the same for weeks now, but today, more seriously, begging people all over America, please stay home. Don't even shop this week unless it's a necessity. And you know that the deliveries are very slow and they're so overwhelmed. Amazon is putting on more people and trying to make it happen. But let's take a little look from your vantage point about pantry cooking and what you may have that you didn't realize you could use.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that we all, you know, a lot of us stocked up when we started social distancing in New York. That was 3 weeks ago. I've gotten one delivery, but I haven't been able to get a delivery since. So I've been having to go actually to the store, which is scary. I'm hoping not to have to, I'm going to just, you know, hunker down and not go back to the store. But, you know, some of the things that I've been using, I have all these different flours. You know, I've done a lot of baking and I've experimented a lot with different flours. So I've been using all of those up, which is great. I made a cornmeal pound cake.
I saw that recipe.
Yeah, and that was good. Easy. And I'm going to do a rice flour pound cake coming up. So I have some alternate flours. So consider, you know, some people say they're having a hard time getting all-purpose flour. Consider other kinds of flours that you might be able to get more easily. Another thing is, you know, obviously beans. We've all been making beans, and those are great. And look at your condiments. I feel like we get bored eating the same things, and, you know, beans and pasta can be repetitive. So this is when you go into your fridge, and you're like, oh, yeah, that mustard I got a year and a half ago, that honey mustard, or what am I going to – how should I finish up this jar of kimchi? Now is the time to look at your condiments and bring them out and use them to make your pantry cooking more exciting. Experiment. Feel free to experiment. You're not having people over. This is just for you and your family. So, you know, if it doesn't come out perfect, it's fine. You're still going to, you know, you'll still have something delicious to eat. Now is your chance. So get in there. Get in the fridge. Clean out those condiments. Your pickles, all those pickles.
So you can always come up with something in a pickle.
Exactly. I love, frankly, like chopping them up and making a pickle relish, you know, a homemade one, not sweet, you know, with all the savory, tangy pickles. You put that in eggs. You can put it in beans. You can put it in soup, chicken soup. So tuna fish sandwiches are amazing with some whole, you know, some chopped up kimchi if you have any, some pickled peppers. So, you know, spice it up now. Now is the time.
No, really. Even pickle relish in tuna fish is delicious. Or if you have leftover poached chicken with holidays coming up, you know, Passover and Easter, so many people are making soup and, you know, try to improvise for this unusual time of year.
Yes, I know. I'm about to get ready for the Seder, and I'm trying to figure it out. But I have a lot of radish and I have matzah.
That's right. Well, tell me, how did your family do the Seder? It's a virtual Seder this year?
You know, we're not. We're probably the only people in America who don't like Zoom. We're just not into the virtual. I don't know. It makes me sadder than it makes me happy. So we're just going to be the three of us. And so my husband, my daughter, myself, we'll do it ourselves. We know that, you know, my sister and her family will be doing it. You know, the sad thing is that my mom is going to be all alone. So we'll have to make it up to her after this is all over. But, you know, we'll talk to her on the phone.
Without question.
It's extraordinary time.
Tell me, before I let you go, from your beautiful new book, which as soon as this nightmare is over, you can order it online, of course, too, Dinner in French. If you were cooking for your daughter and made one thing from the book, what would her favorite be?
Oh, you know what one of her favorite things is? And this is a good Passover recipe, too. Homemade marzipan. It's so easy. You just need almonds and sugar and an egg white, and it's the easiest thing in the world, and it's kosher for Passover. You have to get Passover confectioner sugar. But, it's really easy. It's sweet. And the best thing about homemade marzipan is, you know, all those adorable little shapes. Sometimes you see marzipan shaped like little animals or fruit. You can do that, which is a good project for little kids, and even my bigger kid, my 11-year-old, loves it. So make a homemade marzipan. Super easy. You know, if you don't have my book, there are a lot of recipes online to do it. It's a good project. It's Passover friendly, and it's a sweet treat. And you don't even cook it. You just put it together in a food processor.
Which is great. And the book has every kind of recipe you can imagine. Right? Soups and wonderful chicken and everything. Beef. And not that complicated.
No, think again, simple French home cooking with a twist. You know, I'm very practical. All of my recipes are made to be streamlined and using as few dishes, trying to make, you know, keep the cleanup easy. I've got recipes like as soon as we can get to the markets again. Ratatouille chicken done on a sheet pan, you know, so sheet chicken and all those delicious vegetables, easy cleanup. I've got a ham and cheese bread, like a picnic bread in there, you know.
Wow.
I've got all kinds of wonderful, I've got an omelet with tahini garlic sauce instead of cheese. It makes it rich, but you don't have the cheese in it. So lots of fun recipes.
Well, it sounds great. And by the way, I know the markets, the delivery is slow. Mercato, have you tried that one yet?
Which one? Oh, Mercato.
The Mercato. Yeah. They've been pretty good.
Okay, thank you for that tip, John.
No, there's a couple. And Dan Barber from Blue Hill, the restaurant, is doing food boxes now that that are really gorgeous and fun and a great gift to send to someone. And you don't have to wait 3 weeks.
I just upped my spices from Burlap and Barrel, which is a great spice company. I ordered a bunch of spices, again, the aim of keeping things exciting, and I got that
exactly.
In 2 days, so. You know, buy spices, buy from the companies that can send it to you. Laura Chanel goat cheese in California sent me a package. So, you know, you have to go to the places that aren't so obvious. You know, Fresh Direct, maybe you can't do, or Amazon, but smaller food companies out there that are looking to supply us. We just have to find them.
Thank you, Melissa. All the best to you and your family.
To you too, Joan. Be well.
We'll talk very soon. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC, celebrating Melissa Clark's brand new book.
The First Lady of New York Radio, Joan Hamburg, entertaining and informative. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Long-term vet. And very well known in practice in New York and close areas, Dr. Andrew Osler is more than a vet to his animal clients, but he's become a shrink to the animal parents too. And when all of us heard that a tiger at a local zoo had really a case of this deadly virus, perhaps from one of his handlers, and that other animals had it too, pet owners were in a panic. So I'm calling upon Dr. Andrew Osler, who's going to help us and answer this question. We don't know what happened at the zoo, but can we get something as deadly as this from our pets?
Yeah, so the short answer for this is absolutely, at this point, no. And the evidence is very good at this point for transmission from dog, cat to person. So what we know is, for example, there are a couple of case reports. We have a million cases of COVID, over a million in people. And there have been three, I think, like you can count them on your hand, how many reports of animals contracting COVID. And only actually the tiger, and I believe there's one cat in Belgium, that actually ended up showing clinical signs. Mm-hmm. But there's absolutely no evidence that this can be transmitted from dog or cat to person. There is one laboratory right now, IDEX Laboratory, which is a lot of veterinarians use that to send their blood samples from their pets there, that has a test for animals that looks specifically for this Corona 19 virus. And they've got about 4,000 tests back, and they were done in Seattle and I believe Hong Kong, and there are zero positive tests back. So if you're talking about three or four case reports out there in the world and you've got a million other cases in people, it's pretty much a non-event. And right now the CDC is not recommending that animals be quarantined from people. The only caveat to that is that if you are yourself testing positive for COVID, they are recommending, just as you would isolate yourself in your home from your family, that you do that from your family pet. So I think that you should think about here is that pets are surfaces. And, you know, if you're petting another dog out in the park, if you run into a dog and you end up petting it, you don't want to be touching your face. You want to be washing your hands. I probably wouldn't be touching any pet but mine at this point to be safe. But there has been no reported transmission from pet fur to people. So there's plenty to worry out there in life. But the pet to people is not one of them. It absolutely is not an issue. And I think at this point, we would have seen this problem emerge. The CDC has no reports of sick pets, except we have this one report from the tiger. So my understanding on the tiger is also that apparently the zookeeper there was positive for COVID and did transmit it to this tiger, which is now recovered. But it's a one-off, and I wouldn't waste a second on worrying about a pet at this point.
I want to ask you a question. I'm talking to Dr. Andrew Opsler, a very well-known home care vet throughout our area. I heard, and you know, we're hearing so much, and a lot of it not true, a lot of it true, that when you walk your dogs, or if your cat is outside, you should wash their feet before they come running through your house. Is that valid or not important?
Well, I mean, that's something I do anyway in my house, but my pets are like everywhere. I mean, can you get COVID off your feet? Yeah, I mean, it's a surface. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that in this sort of, if it's going to make you feel better, yeah, I don't think it's wrong to do. I certainly wouldn't be wearing my shoes into my house, and I think the best way to do that with a pet, obviously they don't have the shoes on, is to give them a quick wipe. One of the things I do for my animals, I mean, my dogs have thick coats, so I have a spray alcohol, 60% isopropanol, and I just spray a cotton, like a paper towel, and I'll give them a quick wipe. Obviously that's not, for very short-haired dogs where it's going to hit the skin, it can be irritating. But just even wiping them down with a little soapy water on a towel would not be the worst idea, including the feet, especially if you're a person that is one of the risk categories, obesity, asthma, diabetes. You know, it would pay to probably be super vigilant. And, it, you know, those kinds of things give you control. There's not a lot you control in life, but at least you're
we can do that.
Sort of like wearing your seatbelt.
Okay, and let me ask you, what about taking your pets to the park? Your dogs to the park during these times?
I think that that's fine. Obviously, you want to keep the distance. They closed all the dog parks because people really, when you go by the dog parks, you would see people 2 or 3 feet apart.
Exactly.
But I think walking them to the park, as long as you keep the distance, is fine. And again, there is no reported transmission from pet to animal from fur contact. So I think that's absolutely, it's fine to walk them in the park. Again, just keeping distance, you know, the social distancing. I don't think there's any issue there. I mean, again, we've had 4,000 pets tested, I believe the number is at this point, and there's been no positives out of IDEX. So I don't see this as a dog, an animal issue at this point at all, for domestic pets.
I thank you. You're very reassuring, Dr. Andrew Opsler, and practicing in our tri-state area. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, take care.
All the best. Thanks.
The First Lady of New York Radio, Joan Hamburg, entertaining and informative. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
So I'm looking at the clock, and it says almost 2 o'clock. We all have to start thinking about dinner. I want to thank you so much for sharing the Joan Hamburg Show, Melissa Clark, and all the information that we're gathering. And be safe. Please, everyone, try to stay home. You know, I came out the other day to my house in Sagaponack. We just were so closed in the city, so we came out, and we've been really locked in. It's only been a day and a half, but we took a ride in the car over to the beach. If I tell you, it looked like August. It was so crowded. And this was at 7 o'clock at night. Please stay home for the rest of the few days ahead until we have a better hook on all this. Anyway, thinking of all of you, happy Easter, happy Passover. We'll meet soon. I'm Joan Hamburg.